Welcome to another edition of the Rebel Room right here on LasVegasSun.com. It's Ray Brewer along with Mike Grimala talking all things UNLV athletics. And Mike, the UNLV football team, not looking great. Off to a, that was very kind of me to say that, right?
It's it's not, I think most people expected this kind of start. But, it's a pretty tough back-to-back blowout losses to top 25 teams, and it doesn't get any easier this week. They get another top 25 team. They're going to Fresno State, which is number 24 this week. So, I mean, it's not letting up. It's another really, really tough game for them.
So, as we kind of talked about in the offseason, UNLV really doesn't have a concrete quarterback. Doug Brunfeld looked great in relief against Eastern Washington, was good at ASU until he got hurt, and everybody behind him has been ineffective or injured, and without question, Rodgers will no longer play quarterback because he can't throw the ball. UNLV has played four quarterbacks, have only scored 20-some points this year, all thanks – or no, more than that, like 40 points total. All thanks to Doug Brunfeld. And they could be well on their way to a winless season.
I was working on a story right now, and the Brunfeld, the passing numbers, so-so, 6.8 yards per attempt. But, he's 11 of 26. It doesn't look great, no touchdowns. But the other three quarterbacks that they've used – Justin Rogers, Cameron Friel, and Tate Martell combined 3.5 yards per attempt, which is just if you're averaging 3.5 yards per attempt, you're not a quarterback. You need to change positions. So he's doubled the yards per attempt of everyone else on the team. And those are small sample sizes. Friel only threw a handful of passes. Tate Martell, they're not really getting a chance to throw a lot. It's Brunfeld is really the only guy who has looked like he'll give you a chance to win. And the good news is that he's practicing this week. He's a full participant in practice. So he should start at Fresno. And I mean, that obviously gives you the best chance to win. So that's the good news.
How much of the 0-3, because you've been at all three games, at ASU, you were only one of two media members at the game. How much of 0-3 is the quarterback situation, or are they bad in other spots as well?
The defense is not good. Like they've given up 35, 37, and 48 points in the three games. So the defense is not really getting stops, but it's complementary. Like they don't have, if you've got a better quarterback and you've got a better offense, you're winning field position. You're not putting your defense in short fields. You're holding the ball for longer. You're giving your defense more rest. So some of that is complementary, and they're just not getting that out of the offense. Like they're going three and out like clockwork. Every time they get the ball, they're three plays punted away. And it's just really hard to play defense like that. So I'd say the majority of it has been quarterback play. They're just not scoring. They're not moving the ball, but the defense has not been good either. So it's like, it's a team with a lot of holes.
So the one I was at the Eastern Washington game, and on TV I watched part of the Arizona State game. Actually bet the Rebels in game plus 19 against Arizona State. Pretty big mistake. They didn't look bad there in the first half against Arizona State, right?
That was when they've looked their best. They had a touchdown drive. Brunfeld had a nice touchdown run where he flipped into the end zone. They got, multiple stops on defense. That might have been, the best they've looked all year, aside from that late in the fourth quarter comeback against Eastern Washington. But obviously a big step up in opponent. Arizona State, that first half, they looked like they were, kind of thinking upset, like maybe they could be in that game. Couldn't sustain. Once Brunfeld went out, though, it was over. That was the end of that.
Yeah, on the road against the top 25 opponent, maybe it gives us a little glimpse of what Marcus Arroyo is trying to build at UNLV. A lot of talk has been out there that, he's obviously 0-9 as the UNLV coach. when is he going to get this first win? And you bring up the Fresno game. Fresno, obviously, coming off the win at UCLA last weekend. UCLA, I think, was 15th nationally. They went into the Rose Bowl, put up 40 points. But I do expect the Rebels to have a decent effort here against the Bulldogs, because it is the first Mountain West game. And if you're playing that, you know, that psychology with your players, you know, you still got a chance to be Mountain West champions. Theoretically, I mean, it's not going to happen, but I mean, you could still tell them, hey, everybody's 0-0 starting today. Why not us?
That's true. And, you know, if you look back, you know, in recent history, Fresno State is a team that obviously different coaches, different personnel and everything, but that's a team that UNLV has, they've won at Fresno State before. They've gone in as big underdogs and they've won that game. They've beaten Fresno State at home last year, you know, when UNLV went 0-6 and was, you know, not competitive in any games. The one game that they kind of put up a bit of a struggle in was against Fresno State, where they were kind of close in the second half until Fresno State pulled away and blew them out. So, you know, some of that is historic and those players aren't there anymore and the coaches are gone, but, you know, Fresno State is a team that UNLV has had some success against. So maybe you can draw on that a little bit, but.
And we were messaging during the Eastern Washington game, and I've never been one of these media guys that likes to be critical of an X's and O's type of strategy for a team, because I didn't grow up playing football. I certainly didn't play college football. I don't have the pedigree to be critical of anybody, you know, basketball, football. I can't question a coaching move because it's not my, I mean, I'm just a football fan like you are, right? You know, we cover the sport, but we didn't play. We don't know, you know, the ins and outs and what works.
If you put me on a chalkboard and said, hey, draw up a play and explain this coverage and this defense, like I can't do that. Like no clue. That's up to the coaches.
What's a dime? What's a nickel? I have no idea. But with that said, I've seen enough of these short passes to know that that's not the answer. Maybe, you know, the wide receiver screen works when you've got, you know, 4-3 receivers too deep on each side of the field. But UNLV certainly doesn't have that. And you're not getting fooled by anybody. And I just
– you hate the wide receiver screens.
I can't stand it. For the love of God, I just – you know, sometimes when you watch a football game, you think that the team is always based – like their whole offense is – you guys run long and we'll see if we can get somebody open downfield and we'll throw the ball. And I'm like, that's not going to work, just sending everybody long. And with UNLV, I'm just desperate to see one player try to go long. You know, now that happened against Eastern Washington and Justin Rogers threw a ball so high, it still hasn't landed.
Here's the thing, I think, with the short, like, at some point, you're as a coach and you're for your players, you just want to reach a level of competency where you're not demoralized. Like if you're trying to drop back and run a regular normal passing offense where you're running, hey, you run a 10-yard in and you run a post and you do that and you're doing like a 5-step drop back, but you're getting sacked on every play if you can't protect that long, and then your quarterback can't deliver the ball downfield, and it's just going to get intercepted or be thrown wild and off target. And it's like, after so much of that, it's like, hey, we just need some competency to keep our players like from not losing hope. So it's like, let's call a play where we know the quarterback's going to have enough time to get rid of it. We know the receiver is probably going to catch it and get the ball in his hands. He'll at least get a chance to run. The blockers in front of him will get a chance to be involved in the, like, that's a wide receiver screen. You're getting people involved. Maybe something happens, as opposed to if we drop back and try and run a pass play past the first down marker, it's either going to be a sack or incomplete or interception or something horrible is going to happen. So there's a time and a place for the wide receiver screen, but I think that's a lot of that is just personnel. Sometimes that's the only pass play they can execute.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you this. So for the last like 4 or 5 UNLV seasons, not last year and certainly not this year, whenever UNLV went to like Michigan or Ohio State or USC, they ended up losing by four touchdowns or whatever, but by no means were they blown out. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no laughers. I mean, to watch the game against Iowa State, you're like, holy crap, man, this is, I mean, Iowa State's good and they're ranked nationally and they should have, you know, put a can of deficit on UNLV, but UNLV had very positive plays. And, you know, I worry about the long-term impact of this season in the way that, you know, fans have already lost interest, right? Now you're going to have your 2,000 or so UNLV supporters that are there for every event, rain, snow, or shine. But the average person is losing interest, right? And now you've allegedly had two great recruiting classes. Are recruits going to want to come here? And then you're thinking, okay, well, you've got the stadium, you've got the training center, brand new. How is this happening? And there's not even an athletic director. So this is a pretty awful time for UNLV. And this is coming from the most positive person in America.
Did you think that they looked ready to play against Iowa State? And I know that you're coming in with your number three quarterback, who is a true freshman. So it's going to be tough against a team like that with an elite defense. But did you think that they were ready to play?
I mean, I don't know if that's a great question, Michael. I just don't know how fair it is, because it wasn't like they were playing a team that they're even remotely close to. You know, it was like going to my high school beat, but it was like Gorman playing Clark.
That's true.
It was, you know, not only a Power Five team, but a top tier Power Five team who had more fans in the stands than UNLV. And UNLV was throwing in an 18-year-old quarterback who didn't even play high level high school football, just was on an average team in Hawaii, right?
Yeah, I mean, the talent deficit was unmistakable. Marcus Arroyo, even in his press conference yesterday, said, you know, their right tackle, Tiger Shanks, he had no chance against Iowa State in their pass rush. He was beaten. He had a couple holding penalties, beaten for a sack. Mm-hmm. There's no chance. That's a guy who's a redshirt freshman that you're playing as your starting tackle and has no chance against a team like that. Mm-hmm. But that's like the position that the program is in.
Which is odd, because when he got here, you thought that UNLV was, you know, they were there. They were right there. They were, you know, a solid, I think, 4 or 5 win team.
It wasn't a teardown. Like it wasn't a situation where the entire roster had to be purged and torn down.
It was a
pause. And you didn't have to recruit 80 new players. You know, Tony Sanchez pretty much had good offensive lines every year. They were competent on the offensive line. They could protect the passer. They could run the ball. Like they did some things that you could have built on.
But right now
they've gone back. That's one area where it's definitely gone backwards, is the offensive line.
I would agree. And listen, the schedule's a little more complicated this year. Reminds me a little bit of Bobby's first year, where they were like Utah and TCU, both nationally ranked in league play, followed by like a rare October non-league game at West Virginia, you know, and that's a tough cross to bear. At the same time, Eastern Washington, I don't know, you know, if they're a great FBS school, but they were a few drops and missed field goals away from beating UNLV by 20 points. Mm-hmm. They dropped a few passes in the end zone. And all credit to UNLV for coming back in that game, you know, showed a lot of heart and determination. And I think, and I don't know if this is right, but from what I've seen, Michael, the kids seem to be playing hard.
That was pretty much Arroyo's. That's what he's focusing everything. Like he had his press conference on Monday, and pretty much every answer that he gave was some version of like, the players are still playing hard. No one's given up on the season. They were disappointed that they lost to those top 25 teams because they expected to win. And that's like what his big takeaway is that these players are still competing. One of the things I know you look at the schedule and it's like, you got Fresno State this week, top 25, UTSA the week after, they're 3-0. You get a bye, then Utah State, where are they, 3-0?
Surprisingly 3-0. We had marked them down as one at the beginning of the year, one of those coin flip spots, right?
Yeah, that was one of the games, one of the two games I thought was probably their like most likely to win was that in Eastern Washington, but now Utah State's 3-0. Then you got San Jose State, and they're good.
San Jose State's great.
At what point do it's great that the players are buying in and they're upset that they lost, so that they expected to beat Iowa State. What happens when they're 6-0-6 or 0-7? Like, how long can you keep that up? How long can you keep these players fighting with like no reward, with no results and no reward? And like, no.
Yeah. What's the school? Is it Temple, whose coach quit after game one or game two? And they're going out there and they're just getting destroyed every week. You know, could that happen here is the question.
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate question. I know that you got to think that the number one offseason priority will be to find the biggest cupcake in the country, whatever that team is, very, very bottom ranked team in Division II. And they're going to be here at Allegiant Stadium week one next year.
If I'm UNLV, my goal coming out of this season is to have an established quarterback. I don't want to go into spring practice with three guys sharing reps. I want Doug Brunfeld to be my guy, for him to get every snap, to get better, and nobody touches him. He's in a bubble, Michael. No contact at all the entire spring.
Can that happen if Tate Martell is on the team and on the depth chart as a backup? Can someone be like an undisputed
starter? Tate Martell's got a cast on right now.
He does, but if you watch Twitter during the games, it's all Tate Martell. Like, why isn't Tate Martell in the game? Let's see what Tate Martell can do.
And he moved him down the field. That was the best part, right?
So I'm saying, like, if your number one goal is to get an established quarterback, is that possible with Tate Martell on the team? Unless he becomes the number one guy, that's going to be a tough goal to accomplish this year on the outside. Anyways, internally, the team may be 100% behind Brownfield, but I think like the fans are always going to be, until you start winning.
Yeah. I mean, I just, if you're UNLV, you know, if you're UNLV, I guess we can't talk about what UNLV envisions for this current coaching staff, but theoretically, Aurora would be owed a massive buyout if he left. So he'll be back, even if they go 0-12 and he's 0-15, he'll be back for year three, theoretically, just because of the economics behind it, right?
I believe so.
Okay. Does he then maybe hire an OC so where he's not calling the plays anymore? Or does he fire the DC and bring in somebody else? Because, you know, kind of, this is where you got to mix things up if you're a coach, right? You saw in both Tony's and Bobby's staff where after 2 years they had to, you know, get a new defensive coordinator. Is he going to have to, you know, relinquish play calling duties, if you will? You know, he came in here billed as a great play caller or a great offensive schemer. We haven't quite seen the fruits of that yet, but are we going to try to go at it in year three with the same approach that they've gone at it in years one and two? I can't believe we're talking about this on September 19th, by the way.
Do you want to push this conversation back a few weeks and see what happens against, you know, in the Fresno State and UTSA and Utah? Let's give them half the season before we start speculating on the coaches and the coaching moves. Let's give them 3 more weeks.
At what part though? I mean, we've got a 9-game sample size of the current teams, and you know, how much of those 9 games have been impacted by the pandemic? I'd say 75% of them, right?
Okay.
Is that fair?
Fair in what way? I don't grant the pandemic as an excuse to a football team.
I mean, I would say his first year, he kind of has to get a mulligan on, just because he lost all of his wide receivers. There was no wide receivers.
It was maybe a little bit more tough on first year head coaches, because you know, you have, it's tough to install yourself as the head coach completely remotely on Zoom. But once you get on the field, all 6 opponents that they played against that year were also in a pandemic. So it's like, how much does it really mean? Like, everyone's playing under the same circumstances. So I'm not really going to grant.
He lost a bunch of players though.
It's college football. Everyone loses players every year. Mm-hmm. Everyone's losing players to the pandemic. Everyone's having players test positive. I'm not going to grade on a curve because of that. Okay. So
what was the game that they were closest in?
Fresno State.
Last year.
Fresno State.
The closest game to winning in the 9 games was the Eastern Washington game, right?
Yeah.
And then after that, the Fresno game, right?
Yeah. Fresno State, they were up 7-6 after the first quarter. It was 20-17 at the half. They were down by 3. It was 27-27 after 3 quarters. So they were tied going into the fourth quarter, which is great for them. And then Fresno State scored the final 13 points, 40-27.
So essentially, of the 9 games, they haven't had a chance in 7 of the games.
Correct. And that game was the Max Gillum had a 71-yard touchdown run, which kept them in the game. He ran for 170 yards. Like, that was why they were in that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, you want to give this – I think one of the problems is that, you know, for the history of the program, and I could speak about this because I'm a local, right, and I went to UNLV – they've always seemed like they're closer to a 2-win season than a 6-win season, right? And whoever was the coach was always building the program. And you always talk about what the program can look like and with optimism. But now it's so much different, Mike, because it's finally here, right? The stadium is here. That's your home stadium. The facility is there. That's where you play. So you're on even grounds or higher than all of the other teams in the Mountain West. And to still be struggling to find 2 wins, just it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, there's no more like it should be happening. Like, it should all be happening for UNLV football now. This should be the time when it's all coming together. And it's just not. I would say to you, they turn over coaches every 3 or 4 years. Do you want them to, at some point, just pick a coach and give him 5, 6, 7 years, no matter what the record is, and just see if continuity can help? Like, even if Arroyo goes 0-12 this year and 1-11 next year, do you just want to stick with him no matter what and give him 7 years to see if, like, it makes any difference at all?
Because, well, if you were going to do that, you should have done that with Tony, because he did fundraise for the facility. And a lot of people say that he deserved to get an extra year to coach there for what he did for the program. I mean, I think that, you know, UNLV has gone with the younger head coach in its last 3 hires, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bobby, Tony, and Marcus. If they were to win or whatever, you know, they hit the reset button, you know, whether it's Marcus going to a Power 5 job because he's led UNLV to the promised land, or UNLV hitting the reset button yet again because he didn't lead him to the promised land. I'd like to see a veteran coach come in who's done it before, kind of like, you know, Colorado State hired the guy from Boston College. And also the transfer portal is really adds a whole other uniqueness to football, because in the past you'd have to develop freshmen and sophomores. Well, you're getting an 18-year-old kid who hasn't been in a weight training room. It's going to take a while to get them there unless they're a unique special player, which UNLV rarely gets. That's right.
Okay. Yep.
Why not raid that portal and get 10 Jimmys and Joes that could go?
I think you're seeing the basketball team do that.
Yeah. Why don't you do what Kevin Kruger did?
I don't know. I think that Marcus Arroyo and his staff believe that they are good recruiters. I think that they have they think that they can out recruit the rest of the Mountain West. And if you go by rankings, I think they have. I think that they've been number two in the conference, and both of his first two recruiting classes were ranked highly. So I think they see that as an advantage, like their high school recruiting. They think they can get good players in here. But I guess that goes back to my original question. How long are you willing to give him to wait on these players? Like, if it's going to take 4 years, 5 years, are you willing to give him that no matter what the record is?
Okay, well, if you look at look at the 2020 recruiting class, right? His first one, it was ranked second in the league, right?
Yeah.
Kyle Williams is on there. Doug Brumfield is on there. Those two guys are contributing right now, correct?
They are.
Who else from that class is contributing?
I am looking up this class right now.
Okay, Tiger Shanks is on there. We talked about him earlier. I believe Noel Williams, correct? The DB, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, so Brumfield, Noel Williams is a good player. Tiger Shanks having his issues. Zyl Griffin is a receiver. Hasn't really popped yet, but the coaches have spoken highly of him. And Justin Rogers is a transfer. But from the high school class, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Oh, Adam Plant, maybe, right?
As a transfer. I thought we were talking about high school.
Yeah. So it just – I mean, you got to realize that at every university every year signs 20 high school kids, and how many of them actually turn out to be good? You know what I'm saying?
The two headliners of that class were the linebackers, Brandon Scott and LaShawn Bell, and neither of them have really played.
Yeah.
Years.
And the best players were the Noel Williams kid and a wide receiver.
And Kyle Williams, yeah.
I mean, you could argue that Noel Williams has been their best player, the best recruit they've had, right?
I think Kyle Williams, by virtue of winning Mountain West Freshman of the Year last year, he's been the top recruit, but Noel Williams has been very good this season.
He's a captain as a freshman. Yeah.
And got an end zone interception, a couple targeting calls, but, you know, that can maybe
– and here's a guy who – was only offered by Eastern Washington, Northern Arizona, and Sacramento State. So it wasn't like he was a celebrated recruit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a good get. But the thing with football is, I think, as to your point earlier about high school recruiting, you need to get like 15 guys like him every year. You know, one Noel Williams is not enough to make your defense good. You need 15 other guys like him on defense. So
yeah, and again, I just don't know what their identity is on offense. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what the plan is, what the strategy is. You know, it is what it is, and this is only three games in. Wait until some of these players get injured, and now you're down to your twos. It's going to be quite the adventure, my friend.
I would say that identity, they really don't have an offensive line. The offensive line is not good. And when your offensive line is bad, it's hard for you to do anything else at a high level. So I think that's probably the number one issue, along with the quarterback keeps getting hurt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You think they're going to, let's, I guess we can start wrapping this up. Are they going to win a game this year? Based on what we've seen?
I don't know, Michael. I mean, to me, in the late fall when crazy things happen, could they sneak up and get one? You know, when Hawaii comes to town, maybe. I don't know. I mean, if you would have asked me this 3 weeks ago, like you did ask me, I would have said yes. But now I just, with Utah State being as good as they are, that takes one possibility away. So now it's basically down to Hawaii, right?
Get Hawaii at home on November 13th at Air Force on the day after Thanksgiving is a season finale. Those are probably like the two games you're – is Air Force good this year? I haven't
seen
them. They're 2-1. They're 2-1.
Going up to Air Force in that cold weather, I don't like that. And they lost the shootout to Utah State. Right?
Yep.
So, anyways, brother, for all of our listeners, we will try to do one every other week or so, and we appreciate all the support. You're listening to The Rebel Room on LasVegasSun.com. Thanks for following Michael's coverage. For Mike, I'm Ray, and we'll talk to you soon.